Welcome to this 19-part series of Business Podcasts by David Maister, exploring the key principles and practices found in his new book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker.
Hello, I'm David Maister. In this series of podcasts, I'm proud to present a special 19-part series of the audiobook version of my new book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. If you're interested in purchasing a copy of the book in hardback, it is now available from both Amazon.com and at my website at davidmaister.com/store. Episode 7, The Friendship Strategy, taken from my book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. In trying to understand how to build business relationships, we should draw upon what we already know from relationships in our personal lives. People often don't do this. It sometimes seems as if when they come to work, people leave behind everything they've learned about interacting effectively with others. If you have an active social circle and people like being with you, the odds are that you will have a significant advantage in learning the skills and habits of business development. If, on the other hand, you're a social recluse, you will find it more difficult to convince clients to see you as a trusted advisor they wish to work with. The way most clients choose professionals is essentially identical to the way people choose their friends. They look for professionals who can A, put them at ease, B, make them feel comfortable sharing their fears and concerns, C, inspire trust in their ability to oversee both the client and his own transaction, and D, prove their dependability. Creating these feelings in others begins with having the correct attitude, a sincere interest in others. However, the outward signs of this genuine caring are often conversational and interpersonal skills. If you want to win a client's business, it's necessary to give the client a chance to talk to you, person to person, about their needs, wishes, and wants. The key is to make it easy and comfortable for the client to share his or her feelings and secrets. In short, if you really want to win a client's business, you must know how to have a conversation. There's nothing conceptual or special in this use of the term conversation. Think of it literally, the way we all use the word in everyday speech. The characteristics of a conversation include: it's person to person, not role to role. People use normal language, not corporate speak. Both sides talk, and what one says is dependent upon what the other has just said. Both parties are engaged in joint problem-solving. Neither is trying to win or prevail. It's designed to allow people with different views to learn from each other. Marketing and/or selling begins to work when a conversation moves away from being a role-to-role exchange of capabilities, contracts, and costs, and becomes a person-to-person interactive dialogue about ideas, beliefs, and perspectives. Only then can it build the chemistry, confidence, and commitment that leads to new revenues. Imagine a dinner party conversation. What makes a good conversationalist in such a setting? He or she, A, has a fresh point of view, but does not try to thrust it upon everyone else. B, speaks politely and respectfully. C, tells good stories to illustrate key points. D, is good at drawing other people's views out and drawing them into the conversation. E, speaks intelligently on a variety of subjects, but is not afraid to admit areas of ignorance. F, avoids trotting out well-worn arguments or clichés. G, listens with genuine interest. And finally, is lighthearted in style, but always respectful of others' views. Now, all of these conversational skills also apply to effective marketing and selling. You may remember to behave this way at a dinner party, but do your client meetings really meet these criteria? What about your seminars, speeches, articles, blogs, and websites? Is the tone of your client interactions friendly, inviting the client to chat, to think about ideas together, and to encourage both sides to get to know each other as people? This doesn't always come naturally to everyone. For example, if I'm in the wrong mood, I can find a dinner party to be an effort. I may ask the person on my left, "And what are your hobbies?" Oh, the person might reply, "I love mountain climbing." At this point, I have to fight an overwhelming desire to turn immediately to the person on the other side to save me from having to ask the first person a follow-up question. Mountain climbing. Ye gads, this is going to be a long night. Other people, however, or me on a good night, can and do immediately think of 3 or 4 follow-up questions. Where do you go? Do you climb alone? What got you started with this? What equipment do you use? And can continue posing additional questions all evening long. By the end of dinner, their table companion, who has done nothing but talk about himself or herself the whole time, has come to regard the questioner as an enjoyable person to be around. He or she will look forward to meeting again. So it is with business development and client relationships. The most trusted advisor in every profession are not those who have a ready answer for every client problem, but those who can, through questions and conversational style, put the other person at ease, make him or her want to tell you about himself or herself, and engage in a dialogue. And just as in personal life, this is done not by trying to be impressive, but learning how to show a genuine interest in other people and keep them talking. Now, can this habit be abused? Yes. Will it work if you're only faking it? No. Can you leave it out? No. Doing this requires that you are comfortable in your own skin and that you are who you are. Much of traditional marketing is designed so that people aren't required to put their own humanity on display. They hide behind formal corporate language and tactics. Not only are such approaches ineffective, but they create the impression that the professional, the individual, and the firm is afraid to let its hair down. For a deeper exploration of the conversational metaphor and how it can be put to work, see Marketing as a Conversation, a co-authored article on my website. I had to learn many lessons about friendship and client relationships the hard way. For years, I've worked for clients who have been gracious enough to invite me to dinner the evening before or after my work with them. They weren't trying to get more work out of me. They just wanted to be sociable. However, I have resisted being on duty after a long day's work. It's not that I don't like my clients, but that I prefer to unwind by being alone. I'm not that sociable by nature. I don't drink. I don't like sports. I like the Bee Gees. You get the idea. I now regret this aversion to socializing. No matter how successfully I may have built relationships by focusing on my clients during the workday, I now realize I've missed many additional opportunities to build profitable and fulfilling long-term client relationships. Some people do have a talent for friendship. My late and much lamented friend Roger Bennett was so good at friendship that in his 40s, he still kept in regular touch with people he had gone to school with at the age of 12, and with people from all walks of life and of differing tastes, social standing, income levels, and preferences. Roger could talk sports with some people, switch to an intellectual discussion of philosophy with others, and share cooking tips with a third group. Lots of people considered Roger their best friend, and few people did not enjoy his company. Yet he was never anything but himself. He was not a chameleon acting differently just to blend in. He fit in everywhere because he was interested in a broad range of things. To paraphrase actress Angelina Jolie, who was asked in a television interview if she had to like the characters she was portraying in order to depict them well, "You can't love everything about everyone," she said, "but there must be something there. The key is to find that one small slice of overlap between you and them, and then you focus on that overlap, ignoring everything else." I don't know much about acting, but that sounds to me like a perfect recipe for human relationships. Friendships can be based on finding even a single mutual interest, no matter how small. If someone else has to mirror you entirely to be your kind of person, you will have few friends. Surprisingly, it also turns out that you are more likely to build a bond with someone by letting him or her help you than by being too eager to help him or her. My wife Kathy, for example, is involved in a variety of handicrafts groups. She reports that some of her most dedicated friendships began when she confessed her relative weakness and accepted help from others, whereas those she helped often resented having to seek out or accept her input. Again, this principle applies to client relationships and business development. You will accomplish more by saying to potential clients, I'm not sure I understand why you're doing things the way you do. Could you explain it to me? Then you will by saying, if you'll just shut up and listen, I'll tell you the right answer to your problem. As professionals, we sometimes incorrectly think that to be impressive, we must demonstrate our competence by never revealing our weaknesses or areas of ignorance. One of the ways you build friendships is to let people help you. Developing the self-control to do it that way is a lifelong learning process. When I was young, I thought that the way to make friends was to become an interesting person. Eventually, I learned the truth. You don't make people want to spend time with you because they feel good about you. You do it by making them feel good about themselves when they are with you. Ask yourself, do people feel comfortable around you? No, she's always trying to be the center of attention. Do they enjoy themselves when they're with you? No, he's always trying to win arguments and prevail. Do they feel that they can let their guard down and tell you how they really feel and what they're really worried about? No, because when I do, she's always trying to take advantage of me. I don't trust her to be really interested in me. None of this means you need to make people feel good by engaging in false flattery, which is soon detected and rejected. It means that you learn to talk and act in ways that make people feel comfortable and safe around you. They feel that you are on their side. Then you can disagree and have lively debates without taking things personally, because the friendship matters more than anything else. The same is true in business development. The key to getting hired is not convincing clients of things about you, I'm terrific, trust me, but convincing them that you will look after them. It's also worth pointing out that, with people, you get points for trying. It's like a romantic relationship. You don't have to be perfect. Your partner just wants to see that you're sincerely trying to do the right thing. Your motives are more important than your abilities. Abilities, however, do count, and that's where getting started early matters. Suppose you want to be good at building romance, getting another person to work with you to build a mutually beneficial, mutually supportive relationship. What characteristics would make you good at this? Most of us have discovered that whether it's love, friendship, or work, people respond best when they believe that you are, among other things, considerate, supportive, understanding, and thoughtful. Some other friendship attributes include being appreciative, empathetic, respectful, responsive, sensitive, sympathetic. Now, these words may again sound as if they are moral points, but it's simply how people actually work. The answer is that it's likely to be some variant of the fat smoker syndrome. We know what works, we know what's good for us, but it takes a lot of attention to detail today to get the reputation that's going to benefit us in the future. A reputation for being supportive, for instance, must be earned through social habits. And to be seen as considerate, you have to be able to remember information that people shared about their lives, proving that you actually listened and paid attention. It also helps to follow up with skillfully phrased questions about what you were told last time you met. The idea is to demonstrate concern, not intrusiveness, with a question like, "How did it work out with that guy you met?" Another thoughtful classic business gesture is to email someone something you found on the internet that relates to that person's interest. To achieve the desired effect, this must not be a formulaic, phony, overused gesture, but a genuine, useful overture. With practice, you can learn to tailor language and small courtesies to the individual recipient. Other social graces work in both personal and business life. It's remarkably effective to remember to telephone your host or hostess the day or week after a party to say something like, "I just wanted to say thank you for the party the other night. I had a great time. What time did you eventually get to bed after cleaning up all the mess we made?" Exactly how formally or informally this will be expressed is different in different parts of the world and among different types of people. But the habit of expressing appreciation and judging just how much is enough without being false can and must be developed over a lifetime. Similarly, it's quite powerful to call clients after a business meeting to say something as, "I just wanted to let you know how much I appreciated the opportunity to work with you. Thanks. See you next time as planned." Done with sensitivity to local culture and phraseology, such a call can go a long way towards making the other person realize that you do not just see him or her as a business contact, but as a person with whom you want a friendly relationship. Not everyone will reciprocate, but the majority of people will. If you do not develop the habit early in life, the act of making such a telephone call after a meeting could feel awkward, eliminating the casual, comfortable, just a quick call between friends atmosphere that you wish to create. For example, my friend Roger worked hard at staying in touch with everyone. He didn't need an excuse to telephone, but would just pick up the phone to ask clients and friends how everything was going. For him, one context was no more difficult or embarrassing than the other. It's just the way he dealt with people. To be viewed by other people as supportive also takes thought and careful attention to language. It's important to remember that friends don't judge each other. They don't evaluate. They don't point out each other's weaknesses. Even when asked directly, "Do I look fat in this?" friends work hard to find the language that doesn't disparage, with a reply like, "I like the other dress better." Suppose that your friend has a child who is badly behaved. You don't say your kid is a little horror, or you're raising that kid incorrectly, even though both statements may be true. Instead, a friend could say something like, "Have you ever thought about doing or saying such and such to little Ashley?" Having the ability to respond with the right phrase in real time takes practice, as do all social skills. Can you recall how difficult it was to find the right words and tone when you first wanted to signal to someone that you were interested in a date? Can you imagine what it would be like if you were restricted to those same methods today? So it is with business developments. If urgency to win business motivates you to contact a potential client, then you will be under too much pressure to instantly develop these relational skills. Better to start practicing early, when there is less pressure for immediate results and more room to develop your own style and to discover what works for you. People who are good at friendship work hard at developing joint habits and routines, whether it's as simple as discussing last night's sports game or going to the same place each time for a cup of coffee. For my friend Roger and me, regular sessions of playing the card game cribbage became our way of cementing and celebrating our bond. I rarely played the game with anyone else. Good friends go out of their way to celebrate each other's small triumphs and make it their business to be there in times of their friends' need. They stay alert for any opportunity to help, in ways big or small, without keeping track of who's done how much for whom. That's exactly what happens in effective business development. If your reaction to spending your time on these things is that doing so will not pay off for you immediately and therefore is not worth doing now, then you're missing the whole point about human relationships. You're going to be very bad at convincing people to entrust you with their business. If you only do things when they benefit you in the short term, your attitude will be transparent. People will see that you view them instrumentally, interested in them only to the extent that you can get what you want. And if they detect this in you, people will be less apt to give you what you want. The key to business development success is making people believe that you are truly interested in a two-way relationship and that you're willing to earn and deserve your relationship. You must first make deposits in the trusting relationship bank if you wish to make withdrawals later. You need to become interested in people and to initiate relationships. And that means being willing to ask someone out for a drink without being self-conscious about it. And the only way to get that stage is to have a history of doing it. Along with interest in others, one of the most important habits of friendship is taking the initiative and doing the inviting, not just waiting to be invited. It's the old, "If you want friends, be a friend," that you remember from childhood. The way you get people to ask you out is to ask them out first. If it feels like an uncomfortable, courageous act the first time, well, it is. We all need to reach the stage at which we can talk to someone we're interested in, a client or a romantic prospect, without being frozen into inaction by our hopes and fears. The guidelines are well known. Keep it casual, keep it small, and take it a step at a time, but get out there and start meeting people. Yes, we hated it when our parents told us to do that as children. It's no less terrifying today, but it works. Go ahead. Ask people about their work lives and their personal lives. Do as an exercise in developing your curiosity muscles. Do as an exercise in asking good follow-up questions about what people tell you. Do it to develop your ability to understand other people who are not like you. Do it now. As individuals or as organizations, it is possible to set out to develop friendship skills. However, like all aspects of the fat smoker syndrome, it requires a concerted effort to invest today in building skills and relationships that will pay off tomorrow. Unless they're already naturals, relatively few individuals and even fewer organizations have the self-discipline to stick with the program. That's why it's a successful strategy for those who do. This concludes this chapter of my book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker. If you're interested in ordering a copy of the book in its printed form, visit Amazon.com or my website at davidmaester.com/store.